Case number 13-5080, Kim S. Westberg, husband, and Laverne V. Westberg, wife, appellants, versus Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, as receiver for and on behalf of Silver State Bank and Multibank 2001 RES ADC Venture LLC. Mr. Lavoie for the appellants, Ms. Gunning for the appellees.
May it please the court, the threshold issue that avoids the need to address all others is whether the Westberg's claim is based on the independent acts of Multibank or instead functionally against the FDIC under this court's 2011 ruling in American National v. FDIC, which set forth the controlling analytic framework. The Westberg's claim is based on the independent acts of Multibank because Multibank reiterated the demands that the FDIC had made for payment under the repudiated loan.
But isn't this really different from what we had in American, where there was a third party that whose the claims against which could not be resolved through the administrative process?
We don't. American National, the dispute in American National potentially could have been resolved in the claims process if FDIC had some liability for the alleged combinational acts between it and J.P. Morgan Chase. The complaint was ambiguous as to whether FDIC had played any role in the alleged wrongdoing, and the court decided not to reach that issue. But it's at least a possibility. We don't know for sure because of the posture in which that decision was reached. But I don't think that that distinction is dispositive here. If the Westbergs had sued Multibank for declaratory relief based solely on the FDIC's demand for payment, which had not been reiterated by Multibank, then indeed I think the jurisdictional bar would apply. Multibank made a discretionary call about whether to make a demand for payment. The only case addressing the issue in the country as to the legal effect of repudiation is a Fourth Circuit decision that says repudiation extinguishes any obligation of counterperformance because it constitutes a complete and total material breach of the loan agreement. When Multibank acquired the loan, it made a discretionary call about the legal significance and how to interpret the FDIC's repudiation. Not surprisingly, it made the same call the FDIC did, and based on that, made the same demands. But nothing obligated it to do that, to follow lockstep with what the FDIC had done. And here's the point that...
Can I ask just a factual question here? When Multibank purchased this loan, presumably they weren't purchasing this loan alone.
They purchased it in bulk.
And give me some idea of the volume of bulk.
Well, they're called Multibank because they represent an aggregation of loans from multiple banks. I don't know the precise size, but if you look at the assignment and transfer agreement, it is, you know, these are significant pools of loan bought by institutional investors for investment purposes.
Is there any evidence that Multibank made an individual determination on Westberg's?
No, there's not. And let me say, when you look at the asset the agreement of assignment and transfer. The FDIC is emphatic in that agreement that no representations and warranties with regard to the status or enforceability or of any nature are made with respect to these loans. They're bought on an as-is basis, and that's the reason they're heavily discounted.
But if we agree with you, I mean, the whole point of the FDIC as receiver is to get rid of these assets as best they can. So that's what they really want to do. And that would mean that every time they do it, then, you know, you don't have to exhaust your administrative remedies, right?
Well, I think, you know, the argument that the FDIC always makes is that if you don't extinguish all possible assertions of right against assignees that were not made administratively, it will leave a dark cloud of uncertainty over the transferred assets, here the loans, that will diminish their value and thereby disserve the interests of the receivership estate. I don't disagree that it does in some sense create uncertainty that would likely...
Presumably there
yes,
was a
but
reason
that,
for setting up this administrative process.
But that is not the only consideration here. I mean, if the only question were what is expedient and efficient and maximizes value for the FDIC, if that were the only interpretive consideration, then sure, the result is obvious. But there is another consideration, and that's the property rights of the borrower.
But
and we can't steamroll those.
In the complaint, Multibank made the point that they were just stepping in the shoes of the FDIC.
No.
They weren't. Multibank didn't make the point that they were somehow acting independently.
Well, and actually,
and
that was.
Just one,
I'm sorry.
And the jurisdictional bar is a little broader than what you suggested. The jurisdictional bar is for any claim, anything relating to a decision of the FDIC. This clearly relates to a decision. I mean, it's not as if Multibank came along and on their own thought of this course of action. Right?
Sure. The allegations that you're referencing were actually by my client. In the amended complaint. And what I want to emphasize is that we were not pleading the first amended complaint with this issue in mind. We had filed an initial complaint that the FDIC had moved to dismiss, and it did not raise this jurisdictional argument in its motion to dismiss. It raised another one that was completely distinct. We had no reason to believe this had issued. This was not, we had pleaded the general jurisdictional statute that allowed us to sue in the D.C. District Court, and no one disputed its applicability. This is sort of a distinct theory of no jurisdiction that we had not anticipated. And even if we had anticipated it, the analytic framework that focuses in on independent acts was not established until almost 2 years later, when the American National decision came down in 2011. So not only was this issue not in play, but we had no reason to plead in terms of independent acts because the significance of that concept had yet to be established in American National. We survived the initial multiple motions to dismiss based on jurisdiction. We're at summary judgment on the merits. And the judge then sua sponte raised the jurisdictional issue again, apparently having seen something in the case law while analyzing the merits, and we rebriefed it. At that point, years down the road, after American National had come out, the framework was argued. And at that point, it was undisputedly in the record, recited by the district court in the factual background of the opinion and readily conceded by Multibank, both below and on appeal, that in fact it had made demands. If we had known this was an issue when we pled the first amended complaint, if we could have foreseen American National that they would raise this argument, yes, in retrospect, we would have said, and Multibank also demanded payment. But we did not know that was an issue. And what is important here is that American National was decided on a motion to dismiss where the focus was on the allegations of the complaint. Jurisdiction here was addressed at the summary judgment stage where the court was allowed to consider facts outside of the complaint in evaluating jurisdiction. We've cited D.C. Circuit authority on that point. So when it came to this issue at summary judgment, the court was allowed to consider these additional facts not pled in the notice pleading complaint, that, in fact, Multibank had reiterated these demands, which served as the independent acts for purposes of the American National analysis. The key point here is that if you accept the FDIC's position, then anyone who disagrees with an assertion of right by the FDIC must administratively challenge it, or the asserted right, no matter how frivolous, becomes reality. Were the FDIC to demand payment from a discharged bankruptcy debtor, and the debtor did not think to administratively challenge that assertion, the discharged debtor would suddenly become liable again and the debt reestablished. Now, that makes no sense. And there's no more reason for the Westbergs to have known that they should have administratively challenged a rights issue as distinguished from a payment issue.
Of course there was. They were on notice by the claims bar date that any claim they had, and even giving you the argument that it isn't a claim that they were asserting, it was a defense against having to pay, that notice said that despite the repudiation with respect to any outstanding balance previously funded, told them then how future payments should be made. And when you look at your spreadsheet, page 62, your clients acknowledge that they still owe $171,000 plus, and they are making payments per month of $946. That was the time to say, wait a minute, you've repudiated this loan. We should be able to get out from under the balance we owe of the $171 plus that we were loaned. And you didn't do it. And the whole point of the administrative process, so that it's a jurisdictional requirement, is to nip this stuff in the bud so that we don't end up years later still trying to decide whether this loan should be paid off.
As we've explained in our papers, the FDIC affirmatively misrepresented the scope of the claims process. Indeed, it notified us of the claims process and the claims bar, but it misdescribed the scope of the process as far as what claims could be entertained.
Well, are you denying that the notice told your clients with respect to any outstanding balance previously funded how future payments were to be made? I mean, that would tell anybody, wait a minute, I don't think if you're repudiating it, I have to make any future payments.
We agree that the notice said that. We disagree that the FDIC informed us that we could challenge that insofar as declaratory relief. It said that you can only file a claim for money owed you by the failed bank. That was not an instance of money owed us. It was an instance of whether we owed money on a continuing basis. And it wasn't for payment, it was for determination of rights. This claim form is affirmatively misleading, and there is no good reason for the FDIC to continue using it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Lloyd.
What about that claim form?
Your Honor, we have replaced it as of 2010 and deleted the particular language that he is referring to. The statement that you don't have to pay any money or is basically following a previous sentence that explains to vendors that if they want to get reimbursed for their goods and services, they have to fill out the form, and then it follows afterwards saying if you're not owed any money, you know, for these goods and services, then you don't have to fill out this form. In 2010, the agency redid the...
Why did they replace it?
I don't know, Your Honor.
It's confusing. It is confusing.
Well, it's not the most helpful, Your Honor.
A reasonable person looking at it, how would they know? How are they supposed to know that you can bring it? They have to bring a declaratory relief.
Well, I think, Your Honor, that...
money.
The letter that was originally sent very clearly said, here, you have to file a claim, here's the process, and they gave him a contact at the FDIC. They couldn't have called the contact. They could have monetized their claim for declaratory action, put it on there. And they've been requiring declaratory actions to have a claim ever since the Freeman was decided, at least in 95.
So you agree that looking at that claim, one wouldn't know that you have to bring declaratory relief before the end.
The claim form.
Looking at the claim form.
Form. But it doesn't say you can't. It was just this one particular sentence that referred to how vendors get reimbursed for goods and services. But even if it were thought to be misleading, I think that in the Westberg's reply brief on page 10, they indicated that if you have a notice problem, they referred to the Freeman remedy, which is in footnote 2, that says what you do is you file the administrative claim and request a tolling of any deadline. And in August 2010, in our motion to dismiss, we indicated and told them that they had to file an administrative claim for declaratory relief. In document 24, page 11, which was their response, the Westbergs responded saying, out of abundance of caution, we're going to file this administrative claim for declaratory relief. And in the event they needed to request tolling, they would do so if the deadline had expired. In those 3 years, they haven't filed a claim. As a result, they haven't filed a claim. There's no jurisdiction under the very statute that we're looking at, particularly here. Now, in terms of the...
Can I ask you just to take another look at this proof of claim form on page 59? The box that says claims, could they not have put in their offset or called it whatever they wanted? In other words, going to their spreadsheet and saying... offset of 171,501 or whatever was still left of it.
Yes, Your Honor, they could have. They could have monetized their...
All right, now, so how does the proof of claim form look now? Does it have a... I don't have the joint appendix, unfortunately, in front of me, but does it have either an additional box or does it have some way for the... for the Westbergs to say, we still owe this much.
The new proof of claim form does have a line for money, but right after that they have a big box that says description of claim. So,
okay.
And
okay.
Then also on the instructions.
Well, let me ask this. Have you changed on page 60, have you changed your general information and instructions? The sentence that says, if the institution does not currently owe you any money, it is not necessary for you to complete this form.
That's deleted, Your Honor. I could provide a copy of the new form.
Did you say that's deleted?
It has been deleted, yes.
Oh, it has? Okay.
I thought you said that's the lead-in.
Oh, no, no, sorry, Your Honor.
That's not an improvement.
No, it has been deleted.
Sorry.
And you could, it's on our website if you look to the...
All right.
The failed bank lists on our website. If you go to the first failed bank, they'll have the new form.
You can get to that website?
Yes, Your Honor, you can get to it. Or I can supply this with a 28-J letter if you'd like.
There's some government websites you can get to.
Well, I went on the outside one to make sure you could get to it.
Okay.
Now, in terms of independent acts, what this court has held is that basically... you've got to seek a declaration of an independent act, but the independent act must be sufficient so there's liability based on the face of it that's alone to establish liability. Here, when they indicated their independent act, they were just saying that Multibank made demands for the payment, and they still haven't made any other allegations other than that. That demand for the payment relates to the FDIC's act because they would, for release from the repayment, because it's dependent on the FDIC's repudiation and interpretation. So what you have is independent acts that do not have independent acts that are subject to the claims process here. They are not subject to the claims process here. What you have are acts that are subject to the claims process. As a basic, would also like to say that we think that subsection 2 provides the strongest basis for affirmance in this particular case. All right. If the court has no further questions, because the Westbergs did not file an administrative claim in this case for declaratory relief, the district court's decision should be affirmed. Thank you.
Does the court have any further questions?
I don't. Thank you, Judge Brown.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. LaVoy, you can have 2 minutes.
Thank you very much.
The FDIC has suggested that we should go back and file an administrative claim to obtain a determination of rights against Multibank, and the cornerstone of American National is that a demand for an adjudication of rights or award of damages as against a third party is not possible through the administrative claims process. The only thing or demand that can be resolved or satisfied through the claims process is one against the failed bank or the FDIC. Once the demand is against a third party, it is not susceptible to resolution. There is nothing in the record that would indicate that Multibank would consent to or agree to be bound by a determination of rights by the FDIC were that to occur tomorrow. What basis would there be for saying that it would be bound were that to occur at this point? When you read American National, the threshold ruling is that a claim against a third party is not susceptible to resolution administratively because the FDIC does not have the ability to grant relief that is binding on that third party. And then they segue into the Village of Oakwood case, the Sixth Circuit decision that is really sort of the foundation of this recent string of cases that has come on the heels of the economic downturn. And that's where this functionality analysis comes into play, trying to reconcile, because they don't want people to strategically plead. But this is not an instance where we just sued the assignee saying that you are liable for what the FDIC did because you are a successor in interest to the asset with respect to which it did this bad thing. And you have derivative or successor liability for the FDIC's wrongful act. That is not the premise of our claim. The premise of our claim is that you, Multibank, have made demand on us, wrongful in our view, for payment. And we disagree with your demand. The FDIC's demand is 100% irrelevant because the FDIC no longer owns the loan. We could care less what the FDIC thinks at this point because it no longer holds the loan.
Thank you.
Thank you.